The German capital city of Berlin is our destination today on Travel with Rick Steves. Berlin-based tour guides Holger Zimmer and Jim McDonnell are our guests today as they update us on what's new in the city that is somehow both timeless and always changing. For anybody dreaming of going to Berlin, the Reichstag, you know, the wonderful new parliament building with the glass dome on the top, what is going on there? The German History Museum, which I think is so good, it's closed. I'm wondering what's happening there. And the Pergamum Museum. Everybody wants to go to the antiquities at the Pergamum Museum. Jim, what's the latest with the Reichstag, just quite quickly?
Well, what they're doing is building a new visitor center, and this will give visitors a chance then to access the Reichstag underground, kind of like the U.S. Capitol, because right now they've got these ugly white containers in front of the parliament. They want to get rid of that. There's also security issues because it's free to visit the parliament, to go up to the top of the dome, to have a bird's eye view of the city. So this is the project.
If you have a reservation.
If you have a reservation, right. And it's a 250 million euro project, and it should be done by 2030.
Boy, that's going to be really something for Berlin to be proud of. I think we have the same vision for something like that at our Capitol building, and it's just so great that Berlin is doing that. And Holger, what's the latest with the German History Museum?
Yeah, I think they're closed for renovation at the moment, and I think the latest word is that probably when this show airs, that might be up and running
again. Ah, that's good. I've
lived in Berlin for 35 years, and I know whenever they tell me like a year when things are finished, I'll take it with a big pinch of salt, to be honest.
Okay, but they're talking about the Pergamum Museum. That's going to be at least a decade before it's open. Why do people think the Pergamum Museum is so important to visit? What's there? And is there a way to see that while the main museum is closed?
Yeah, the thing is, it really is closed now. It will be for quite a long time. What's it, 2037 or something, they say. But hey, yeah, the Pergamon Altar is a huge piece of architecture from like the ancient times to really get an idea of what a temple district would have looked like. You know, that is quite something. So they renovate this. But what they've done now to kind of compensate for this loss as it's being renovated, they put like a panorama building where you can see this temple district kind of almost come alive.
Is it like a photorealistic painting?
That's indeed what it is.
It's like what we went to at Checkpoint Charlie.
Yep.
And there's one at Wittenberg about the Reformation. So this is by a guy named Assisi?
Yeah, Jadegar Assisi is a great, wonderful visionary with shadow and with light and with sound. And we're really part of this, you know, scene from ancient cultures to see people doing sacrifice to the gods.
Well, it's a time tunnel experience with the help of photorealistic painting. I was just walking down Unter den Linden, and we get to Friedrichstrasse. And I remember during the rebuilding process, great hope for Friedrichstrasse. Holger, what was the vision for Friedrichstrasse and what was how it panned out for that investment?
I think the idea was to, you know, as many cities do that in Europe these days, try to get less cars and more bikes and more pedestrians in. The only thing is, though, it didn't quite work out when they closed it because it is like a very important through road, north-south. It's a long street. So it didn't quite work. So now they opened it up for like car traffic and it was an attempt that failed, I would say, but it's part of this.
It just wasn't as vital. Jim, I remember that when capitalism was coming back, they were going to use Friedrichstrasse as kind of a Fifth Avenue. And of course, you'd have the greatest European department store there, the Galerie Lafayette, right?
Exactly.
And that was a destination just to see the architecture inside. You and I just walked into that a couple months ago. What happened to the Galerie Lafayette because it just closed?
Right. Well, the plan to bring back the Friedrichstrasse to its pre-war status. And you have to remember that this was a glittering surface of Berlin. America had its roaring 20s. Well, so did Berlin had its roaring 20s.
Right.
And all of that was destroyed during the war. It fell in the Soviet sector under communist East Germany. And the East German government just ignored it because it was at the edge of town.
Yeah.
Checkpoint Charlie was at the bottom of the street.
That's
West Berlin.
It was a dead end up against Checkpoint Charlie.
Exactly. And so the East German government, they concentrate all their post-war building around the Alexanderplatz and then down Stalin Allee that became Karl Marx Allee.
Turning their back on the West.
Exactly. And so all of a sudden, you've just got this dead zone here. And then the idea then, especially after 1991, when it's decided that Berlin is going to be the capital of the reunified Germany once again, we need to rejuvenate. We need to bring back the Friedrichstrasse. So lots of money was pumped into that street. The Galerie Lafayette as well was the idea to get people, get that hustle and bustle going again.
But long story short, it failed.
It failed.
And the department store went out of business. And what are they going to do with that big building?
Well, they're not going to turn it into a state library.
Well, a state library. Yeah. There you go. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about what's new in Berlin. And we're joined by Holger Zimmer and Jim McDonough. Berlin is a vast city, a sprawling city. But once you grapple with and get comfortable with the underground, the subway, you're empowered, aren't you? And I understand, Jim, there's a new subway line that's opening up that'll be great for travelers.
Yeah, it's actually already completed, and it was finished during COVID. It's a new stretch of the U5 line, which runs basically from the Central Station Hauptbahnhof to Alexanderplatz. It's a one-mile stretch, a 265-million-euro project, but it now allows visitors to basically just zip down Unter den Linden. And when I take my guests around Berlin, it's become so convenient because it's basically just a belt that goes right through the heart of the city. And, you know, that's one thing about Berlin is that it has a fantastic public transportation network. I've lived there for 19 years. Not once have I ever thought about getting a car because you just don't need it. You can get within every square inch of the city in a very timely fashion. And they still have more plans to really expand the subway line as well. So this embracing of public transport is something that I think is just something we can really take advantage of and be grateful for as Berliners.
Embracing, that's the key word for a tourist, for a traveler visiting. And I'm always a good example. When I get there, I don't have the bandwidth. I'm tired. I just take a taxi to my hotel. And I realize it would have been faster and cheaper and just smarter to get down in the S-Bahn or the U-Bahn and get the day pass or whatever.
Certainly.
And after a couple of days in Berlin, I realized, yeah, baby, I know the tram that serves my hotel. I know where the U-Bahn connection is. I can get anywhere in a snap, and I'm a temporary local. Holger, I know in Germany, you can have the whole country to be your oyster with the public transit. And there's even a subsidized monthly pass.
That's true. The no Deutschland ticket, which is basically like $50, something like this,
$49. Yeah. $50 a month.
Yeah, a month. And you can basically use every kind of public transport anywhere in Germany, with the exception maybe of the high speed, like intercity trains, but all the regional trains and buses. What a great thing. I have it. And whenever I'm like in Cologne, in Hamburg, I don't have to think about buying a ticket, where to get it, what to do. Is it still valid? No, I have this one ticket and I can ride any. And I think that is a wonderful thing.
That
and it's part
is.
Of this idea of make public transport available, make it accessible, and get people to use it instead of using the car, blocking the roads and the streets.
And it's a green thing to fight climate change. And you cannot overestimate the efficiency of the German train system. I mean, I was just in Hamburg and it's hourly departures, 2 hours, and bam, you're in Berlin. And if you got that monthly pass as a resident, you can just do it without a second thought. Hey, you guys, when we think about Berlin, I think about Gendarmenmarkt. It's an elegant bit of Paris in the middle of Berlin, but last time I was there, it was a mess. Berlin's loveliest square was a construction zone. What's happening, Holger?
Well, it's all been dug up, and it's kind of a modern project, and the catchphrase they use is Schwammstadt, like sponge city. So the idea, which is a great idea, actually, to see how we can manage wastewater, how we can manage the canalization system to have actually the city cleaner. And maybe one day, if they've been working this for 15 years now, one day that we can actually swim in Berlin's River Spree again.
Really?
That would be a lovely plan. So the idea is
nice.
To completely remodel it, but install something so the rain will actually be kept and then kind of processed more gently. The only kind of downturn of the thing is, what is it, Jim? 20 million? Is
20
that
million euros.
For one square. And it took like years. And
oh,
all the tourists
goodness.
Were like, what are we doing? We can't look at it. So, but it will be finished soon.
So it's something to keep on our radar, but a couple years down. You know, it's so funny to hear you say that, oh, we're going to make the Spree so you can, we're going to spend the money and invest in it so it's clean enough to be swimming in. You know, Paris did that at the Olympics and they spent a lot of money doing it.
Oh, they did.
But I guess you could give them a ring and see if it was money well spent.
Mm-hmm. We wonder.
we do.
Also, I wondered when you were talking about it so enthusiastically about the Sponge City or whatever. I was in Kreuzberg where they're re-envisioning the neighborhoods, and these streets were being re-divvied up so that bicycles and pedestrians would be very comfortable. And there was planter boxes and there was little playgrounds in the middle of the streets, in the middle of a neighborhood. And then you have these very Germanic, very efficient information panels that have a printout and different charts and everything. And my friend, my local guide said, in Berlin, we love our digital information posts. Do you know what I mean about that? Germany just gets into this. I mean, what do you find about that?
They sure do. I mean, it's that sort of transparency, I would have to say, since the reunification, to bring information, public information, to let us know what used to go on in these different places. And Holger and I were talking about this before. I mean, Berlin is a big city. It's got its own little downtown areas. It's got it's a collection of small villages historically. And so I think these districts, they take a lot of pride in being able to give information to the public.
Transparency.
Transparency.
Germany has learned from this, and I feel like there's a spirit in Germany now to be very forthcoming and transparent, and people want to know what's the story. That's kind of the symbol of the glass dome on top of the Reichstag, the parliament building, so people can, figuratively at least, look down through the glass ceiling over the shoulders of their legislators and see what's on their desks. Our Travel with Rick Steves overview of what's new in Berlin is with American-born Jim McDonough. Jim has made his home in Berlin now for more than 17 years. And Holger Zimmer, who was raised near the former border between West and East Germany. Holger made his way to the big city as part of German reunification not long after the wall came down back in 1989. They're two of the local guides that I depend on for updating my guidebooks and information on the German capital. One great thing about Berlin is the neighborhoods. And as a visitor, we need to know what neighborhood to check out and then celebrate it. Do Unterdenland and do the great museums, but get out into the neighborhoods. Jim, tell me, when we think of Prince Lauenberg, that was a place that, well, it's changed a lot in the last generation.
Right. Prince Lauenberg has really, you know, historically, that was a very working class part of Berlin. And then it fell in East Berlin and also had not as much war damage compared to some of the other neighborhoods. So you have all these beautiful pre-war buildings. And then once the wall falls, then all of a sudden people who live in apartments that belong to a state that doesn't exist, they leave. You have then young people that come in and start squatting. And Holger's one of them who basically goes in and starts to bring a lot of vibrancy to this part of town. And now it's become such, over the years, it's transformed into a very trendy area that we're seeing a lot of gentrification going on.
So this is a fascinating story. And what I love about having a local guide, and I just got to mention to all of our travelers and listeners, can you imagine what a joy it is for me to walk through the streets of a city like Berlin with Jim or Holger and say, tell me about the squatters in Prince Lauenberg. And then Holger would say, well, I was a squatter. Holger,
yeah,
tell us about that.
Actually, so think about it, 1990, the wall had just come down and a lot of the flats were empty, and then people would just kind of, you know, look around to see if there's no light in it. So maybe next day we come and kick the door and then see, okay, there's an empty flat. And there was young people like me being 19, 20 years of age. And back in the day in East Germany, you could not just rent a flat. You had to go to a special state office and ask and apply, maybe can I please rent someplace? And then I said, well, no, don't apply. You don't have a family. So anyway, it was difficult for young people to find a place. And then suddenly, boom, the state is gone. There is no more East Germany. And then people just kind of find a place to live, take it up like we did, and we renovated it. And then a year later, we went to the office and said, hey, actually, by the way, we're living there and we renovated it. So why don't you give us like a contract? And they said, okay, pay 30 marks a month and there you go. And that's how it works.
Did eventually those squatters, some of them get to buy that, or did they just homestead?
Yeah, I wouldn't say buy, but a lot of them, like these contracts were legalized. And of course, then in the course of time, quite often, these buildings were then later bought by maybe the former owners from West Germany or some other corporation.
And then they got kicked out?
Sometimes they would get kicked out, or they would have to find, like, the corporation would have to find for them a different flat. So it is, but it's true what Jim is saying. The old, let's say, working class neighborhood, the district where a lot of working class people worked, is completely transformed. There's a lot of new people coming in, young people.
It's so gentrified now. It's
absolutely
just like, it's almost like you can't believe this used to be hippies and bohemians and a bunch
punks,
of squatters and punks.
No, you can't afford it anymore.
And now you've got people with their strollers and their lattes and this kind of thing. But there's still a couple of little enclaves of that squatter, bohemian chic stuff. But Prince Lauenberg, that's where I like to stay when I'm in Berlin, and some of it is really funky and others is just very charming. The last thing I'd like to talk about is Kreuzberg, because Kreuzberg is known as the Turkish quarter. I think some people say the second biggest Turkish city in the world is Berlin or something.
That's true.
Like that.
That's right.
And Kreuzberg was the least desirable real estate during the Cold War because it was stuck up against the wall and nobody wanted to live against the wall. It was going to last forever. Suddenly the wall's gone. Kreuzberg is in the middle of the city, and it's more desirable land, but it has still got that funky, multicultural personality. What do you feel like when you walk through Kreuzberg, Jim?
Well, it's very energetic, and you think about the history of Kreuzberg, and that was an area where so many guest workers after World War II had settled, primarily from Turkey, and they stayed there, and they brought their own culture, they brought their own cuisine, and now you have some of the finest Turkish restaurants in the city, and they have their Turkish market. And it's a testament to Berlin's status as a huge international city. a melting pot where all cultures come together. They offer something for the city. And that's why we say Berlin is just a whole different animal. It's got this amazing feel due to its international appeal.
Holger, you've lived your adult life in Berlin. You've seen so much change. I'm fascinated by how different cultures deal with immigrant communities. And of course, the first Gastarbeiters, the origin of the term guest worker, which is almost multilingual now or whatever, those were the Turks coming to Germany to get work so they could send money back to their loved ones.
Yeah, from Turkey, from Portugal, from Italy. Like basically, Germany went out to different countries and said, listen,
we need the workers.
We need workers to work in our car manufacturer or whatever.
If we were honest in the United States, we'd all know we need the workers from south of the border.
Yeah.
Now, but I was going to ask you, I feel like Berlin has done quite well with the reality of giving dignity to an immigrant community. As a Berliner, when you look at that, how's it gone?
Well, I think there's kind of two sides to the coin here, because one is like coming and working and settling and being here. The other thing is like, what is the story with language, with integration, with like coming to be part of the culture that you're settling in?
Yeah.
And I think, let's face it, there are some areas in Berlin where you can, you know, have people just basically talking Turkish, which is not a bad thing. But some of the, let's say, second or third generation even are having a hard time, you know, struggling with language, struggling with education. And that's something that is, I think it's a two-way thing. You know, it's what the Germany can do to accommodate, but it's also what people who come to Germany can do to be part of the open society.
Is assimilate an okay word?
I wouldn't say assimilate. It's more like respect where you are.
That's where you are.
I would say.
That's the challenge. And Berlin, it's a beautiful, beautiful thing to watch. And you see a lot of that reality in Kreuzberg. And you walk through the neighborhoods of Kreuzberg. I was just down the Admiral Brücke, the Admiral's Bridge, at sunset.
That's where everyone gathers to have a little
babies.
Drink and, you know, street
music. The canal
music.
Was under street music. The local convenience store is geared up to just sell thousands of bottles of beer. There's the pizza place and the ice cream place. And then you just go, you buy your $2 beer, and you get yourself a slice of pizza, and you sit down on Admiral's Bridge. It's just some kind of amazing community scene.
Yeah, it's a vibe. Yeah. Well, a lot of international people also come. It's got this energy going that's, you know, that's part of this open vibe of Berlin.
Everybody was there enjoying a beautiful evening, celebrating Berlin's ability to live together. And it is a work in progress, and it's a delight to visit. Holger Zimmer, Jim McDonough, danke schön for a beautiful, beautiful visit to Berlin.
Thanks a lot, Rick.
Thanks for having us, Rick. And folks, do come to Berlin.
You'll find more about Berlin on our website at ricksteves.com/radio. Nearly 3 years before President John F. Kennedy would deliver his famous I Am a Berliner speech in Berlin, he issued a challenge to some 10,000 students at the University of Michigan. It was an impromptu campaign appearance late on an October night. Kennedy proposed creating a program that would send young, idealistic Americans like them to use their skills to help with developing nations overseas. With an executive order a few months later, Kennedy created the Peace Corps. Up next, a Peace Corps volunteer is back with us on Travel with Rick Steves to reflect on what the experience did for him.